Good morning, all. The meeting is called to order. Representative Long, we have minutes from March 5th.
I'll move the minutes, Madam Chair.
Well, we're in the minutes right now. All those in favor of the minutes of March 5th, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The minutes are adopted. Representative Straczynski, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. You know, just kind of wanted to just visit with you a little bit as kind of the path is moving forward. We've obviously, you know, we're kind of getting close. We've got a couple weeks left before kind of our due date is up and we cash things in here for Energy Committee. Last year, Republicans had the opportunity to present one bill before this committee. And I know there's quite a plethora of Republican bills, and just was asking the chair what your plan was to hear. Are you planning to hear any more Republican bills before the committee? We had one last year, so far zero this year as far as presenters. Are you willing to make a commitment as far as Republican bills being heard at all, or?
We will be hearing Representative Bowe's bill. I know that, but
okay.
I
his LED bill.
Pardon?
That LED bill. Of his?
Yes.
Okay. Any others that maybe we could count on at all moving forward? Or
we will visit that later.
Okay. Well, I would just encourage you to take a close look at any
okay.
bills that we do. Just we have a lot of decent bills that maybe have some bipartisan support and could maybe use a hearing or two. So appreciate it. Thank you.
With that, we have Representative Stevenson and his House File 4181. And Representative Stevenson, would you want to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that the file be referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Representative Stevenson has moved House File 4181, and I believe you have an author's amendment.
I do. I would move the A-10 amendment gets the bill in the shape in which I'd like the committee to consider it.
All right. The author's amendment, members, is A-10. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The author's amendment is adopted. Representative Stevenson, why don't you tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 4181 relates to a few different provisions regarding electric vehicles. And the bill is the result of a collaboration with the Auto Dealers Association sitting here to my right. Basically, we went out to lunch to talk about the governor's decision to adopt LEV/ZEV standards for vehicles in the state of Minnesota in the fall. And we didn't agree about what the governor should do about that. I thought it was a great step forward. Ms. Backus disagreed, but I agreed to work together on the places where we could agree, which I think is what Minnesotans want all of us to do, to find the places where we could agree. And we could agree that there are a number of things the state could be doing to make it easier for Minnesotans to purchase electric vehicles if that's what they want to do in a way that would also be beneficial to our auto dealer community. And so the bill includes three main provisions. The first is Representative Long's EV rebate program that we had some conversation about last year. The second provision is a grant program meant to defray the cost to dealerships of starting to sell electric vehicles. When a dealership starts to sell a new vehicle, a new electric vehicle, they have a number of costs they have to incur, including training, certification, equipment purchases, so they can service and sell electric vehicles, and those costs can be significant, and we wanted to make sure that that happens expeditiously. I do have, to that point, a handout that I would share with the committee if the pages could distribute it. And what you'll see from this handout, it's a great listing of all of the EVs that are currently for sale in the Midwest. And you can see a lot of different information about what their price is and what their range is. But what I'll ask you to do when you have an opportunity to look at it is look all the way over to the far right of the table, which shows the number of vehicles of each model that were for sale in the Twin Cities, at Minnesota dealerships as of February 13th, so just about a month ago. And you will see that among these 30-some models of EVs that are available for sale in the Midwest, there's really only two or three that are available in any significant quantity in Minnesota. So Minnesotans currently just don't really have the opportunity to purchase these vehicles at dealerships. And part of that is because there's some transition costs for dealers to be able to sell these vehicles. They're an important part of our efforts to mitigate climate change. They are a great opportunity for Minnesotans to save costs over the life cycle of the vehicle through fuel cost avoidance. And so I think it's a great opportunity for Minnesotans to benefit from the opportunity to switch to electric vehicles. Related to that, the third provision requires the state fleet to convert to EVs whenever practical. You know, of course, there are some vehicles in our fleet that, for various reasons, are not well-suited to be electric at this time, but we're kind of laying out a framework for when the state should buy electric vehicles and that we should move in that direction as quickly as possible. So that's the bill. Madam Chair, I do have, I would ask that we turn the floor over to Ms. Backus from the Auto Dealers now.
Welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and its 375 franchise new car and truck dealers around the state of Minnesota. And we are grateful for Representative Stevenson introducing the bill and his recognition that incentives are needed to move the EV marketplace forward. As he mentioned, though, we do have a different approach. While he thinks this is a nice supplement to the ZEV mandate that's being proposed by the administration, we think this is a great alternative that will really make a difference in getting electric vehicles on the road sooner and make a more meaningful impact on carbon reductions. ZEV is a supply-side policy. It does not encourage demand. And states that have seen higher EV sales are those that have encouraged demand by providing purchase incentives. Two of the top-selling EV states in 2018 were non-ZEV states, and you can see those reflected in your handout, and those are because they have robust incentive programs. With electric vehicles costing on average $10,000 to $15,000 more than the comparable conventional internal combustion engine vehicle, the upfront costs of ownership are a deterrent. Consumer interest in purchasing alternative powertrains is growing, but a global automotive consumer study conducted by Deloitte also points to the fact that consumers don't want to pay a lot more to have them, with most respondents preferring a price bump of no more than $300 to $2,000 for the technology. And with an EV, you can save money over the life cycle of the vehicle, but in a recent survey, a majority of Minnesotans say the most important consideration when buying a vehicle is the upfront purchase cost. So if you can't afford the car, it's irrelevant whether you may benefit from alleged future savings. Various studies concur that new regulations are not the most efficient or effective means to promote EVs. Financial incentives are. The MPCA and its 2019 report, Accelerating Electric Vehicle Adoption, A Vision for Minnesota, states that incentives are, quote, the most important factor in EV adoption. The National Association of State Energy Officials agrees with this assessment after compiling a policy matrix that finds vehicle purchase programs the most effective way to get more EVs on the road. And the experience with other states also points to this. Georgia had a 5,000 EV tax credit on the books, but when it was repealed in 2015, their EV sales dropped 90%, from 10,500 sold in Georgia in 2014 to 1,800 in 2015. Other states that have instituted similar tax credits or rebates as proposed in this bill have seen sales of EVs increase by 2 to 4 times the national average. So incentives really help drive demand for the market, bringing more EV options and leading to lower vehicle costs, even without a mandate. Besides low consumer demand, another barrier to finding more EVs in the marketplace are the significant investments some dealers are required to make by their manufacturer to become authorized to sell them. As Representative Stevenson said, this includes the installation of specific charging stations, special equipment and tools, and certification of mechanics that can cost anywhere from $35,000 to over $100,000, depending on the automaker. A dealer will make this investment, but only one, if they have the resources, and two, if they believe they can sell enough EVs to recoup the costs. And many dealers lack the capital to make this investment, especially with the uncertain return as the EV market develops. The grant program established in Section 4 of the bill is a critical tool in overcoming this barrier and will help dealers purchase the infrastructure required to become EV ready. So with that, I appreciate your consideration of the proposal and ask for your support in pursuing a policy that would get more EVs on the road without any economic harm to Minnesota's dealers and the jobs they provide. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions. Thank you so much. There is some public testimony for your bill, and if we could take that now.
Certainly.
Justin Fay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. My name is Justin Fay, and I'm here this morning representing Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy supports House File 4181. Rebates for electric vehicles are a proven tool for supporting EV adoption and are used by a number of states around the country. While many will correctly note that vehicle rebates directly help consumers gain access to electric vehicles, their mere presence also sends a clear market signal to the industry that Minnesota is open for business and that electric vehicles will be supported in our state. We should note that there is a very similar rebate structure in House File 1842 that will be heard next by this committee, and we strongly support those provisions as well. Additionally, we want to applaud the inclusion of grants for dealers seeking to receive certification from manufacturers for the sale of electric vehicles, as outlined in Section 4. Providing support for dealerships, particularly those that are smaller or perhaps being supplied by manufacturers that are moving more slowly into the EV market, removes a key implementation barrier and helps to ensure access to these vehicles for Minnesotans from all corners of the state. In closing, we appreciate the thoughtful direction of this bill and encourage the committee to vote in favor. Thank you.
Thank you. We have amendments. I should first ask, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? I don't see anyone else. Representative Stevenson, we have some amendments. The first amendment is A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A2 amendment. This amendment replaces a 10% premium allowed for state purchases of electric cars with a 5% premium. I believe that we, really need to be careful with state dollars as far as they're being spent. And I think under the current language, this bill allows for electric car purchases by the state as long as the lifetime cost of ownership is no more than 10% more than the cost of owning a conventional vehicle, and this just moves it to 5%. And I'd appreciate your support.
Madam Chair, I would oppose this amendment. I think 10% is an appropriate number.
I see no further discussion. We have the A2 amendment before us. Members, the author of the bill recommends a no vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The next amendment we have before us is A3. Is there somebody who is going?
What is this?
Metzen? Oh, Nelson is going to offer.
Yes, I will move the A3 movement amendment.
Could you explain your amendment?
Sorry about this here. The this amendment, just kind of removing the rebate program from the dealers on the used cars, and dealers would give up to a $40,000 each to offset the cost of adding the electric cars in. And why should taxpayers and ratepayers pay for a corporation to be able to benefit themselves?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, I oppose this amendment. I think Section 4 is a pretty important part of the bill. I think it's broader than what you just articulated. It's not just about used cars. It's about the grants allowing the dealerships to comply or to better offer electric vehicles. And I think this is a very important part of the bill, as both the dealers and Fresh Energy articulated. I'm assuming from Ms. Backus coming back to the table, she might have something to say about it as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, this is a critical piece of the infrastructure that dealers would appreciate having if the state of Minnesota believes that we should be doing more with electric vehicles. Having this grant program is essential and is something very common, at least with the PCA, in terms of doing a variety of grant programs to reduce different critical air pollutants. I know there's a VOC program that has provided $400,000 in grants to small businesses, as well as the Clean Diesel program, which has also in the past provided grants to businesses to help set the cost of providing cleaner air.
Representative Swisinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is to Ms. Backus. So this $40,000 grant's available to try to get dealers into the electric market?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Swizinski. Not all manufacturers, but some do require significant upfront costs before the dealer is even authorized to be able to sell them. And with more vehicles coming online, dealers are nervous that they will be strong-armed into having to sell them and making these investments and might not have the capital to do so. So this would help offset those costs, significant costs.
Madam Chair, and just Ms. Bacchus. So if we're looking at encouraging new dealers to get into the business, is there a shutoff on this? So if a dealer already has been selling electric vehicles, do they also qualify for something that they're already selling to get this grant?
Madam Chair, Representative Swizinski, if you'd like language to ensure that somebody who's already made the investments can't go back and seek them now, we'd be happy to incorporate it into this. This is really for those smaller dealers that just don't have the access to the capital and haven't made that investment so far, that they would have the opportunity to do so.
Representative Swizinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have numbers of dealers that have already sold electric vehicles and potentially either made the investments or not, but sold them, and then also who have not, as far as amounts of dealers across the state, as far as your membership?
I apologize, Madam Chair and Representative Swizinski. I can't speak to a statewide number. I do know, for example, in northwestern Minnesota, maybe there are 4 of the 26 Chevy dealers that have made the investment. The others I've spoken to have not been able to because of that upfront cost.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. If it sounds like the proprietors of this bill, Representative Stephen, are open to not allowing this for folks that have already sold electric vehicles and/or already made the investment, might be allowed to access the grant. If you'd make that change, it seems like a common sense one. So, thank you,
Madam Chair, Representative Swizinski. I certainly will work with you on that language and see if we can figure out something that works. Happy to have the conversation.
Representative Poe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Help me to understand what the additional expenses would be that the dealers would be facing that would require this kind of money to help them through that process.
Madam Chair, Representative Bowe, I think that there's a number of different expenses that might come to it from the certifications that we talked about, the training. Keep in mind that most dealers not only sell these vehicles but service them, and so their mechanics have to be trained. This is electric car looks substantially different from an internal combustion engine in terms of how you service it, and so there's going to be a lot of training related to that. There's equipment, charging infrastructure, other things that a dealership would have to have. I may have, and I don't know if I have anything else that I missed or anything else missed.
I know Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson did a good job, but just for an example, GMC is bringing a new electric Hummer into this market, and they have talked about the investments dealers would need to make to be authorized to sell. Those are upwards of $140,000 related to the level of charging station that's required, lifts, and a number of tools to help maintain the batteries going forward.
Representative Gierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add one of the things I saw when I was out at the local technical school recently was that there's ongoing training for dealers and their employees in service work on new vehicles all the time out there, and that is a significant cost, which people have to go out and have that training. It's usually on a weekend or in evenings, and those classes are always full, just ongoing process to train people on the newest technologies of combustible engines, so I can see that there would be an educational element for all of the service workers, but also the salespeople. So there's some of that too. So I just wanted to add that. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Swizinski. Did you have a final comment?
I believe it's I think it's Representative Nelson's amendment, Madam
Chair.
Okay,
I just had you on the list.
Oh, sorry about that. I think I was just waving my finger once in a while. So
I don't see any other comments. The A3 amendment is for you members. The author of the bill recommends a no vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. We have the A4 before us.
A4. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A4 amendment. And this amendment just deletes the provision that gives low-income persons a larger electric car rebate. I mean, the state government, I think, if you look at common sense, should not be encouraging low-income people to purchase brand-new $60,000 vehicles. I just ask other members in the committee here, if you're if you are low-income households, how can they afford insurance, you know, selling the license fees, the vehicle fees, and mileage fees, if the state's going to essentially try to be working with everyone? You know, I think this amendment's more just have the conversation of, you know, while I understand that we want to help folks with lower income, but is it also wise of us to be having people, you know, on a depreciating asset like this, encouraging folks of lower income to maybe be purchasing something that could potentially put them in harm's way economically?
Madam Chair, Representative Seaboy, I disagree wholeheartedly with the entire premise of that question. I think that, you know, we should be encouraging and allowing everyone to have the opportunity to take advantage of the savings and efficiencies and benefits of having an electric vehicle. Including low-income Minnesotans. I think this is an important part of the bill, and I'd urge a no vote.
Members, A4 is before you. I did not see your hand.
Madam Chair, I'm going to just withdraw that amendment. I mostly presented it to have the conversation because I truly believe, like, you know, when you look at your constituents, you know, is this the proper role of government to be encouraging people to buy things that probably they can't afford? You know, if they already can't make rent, if they already can't do a lot of the basic things in life, should we be saying, you know, why don't you go out and buy that car that is going to put you in financial straits, even if the state comes in because the salesman is good? They could make, you know, you look at, you know, the next bubble potentially going to be bursting, and that's the car market when it comes to loans. And, you know, I think we really need to be cautious about what we're doing and what kind of financial straits we're going to be putting people into. So.
Okay. Representative Swazinski withdraws A4. We have A5 before us, members. Does somebody want to? Representative Swazinski.
I'd like to move the A5 amendment. This amendment limits the vehicle rebate to one each per one vehicle. It allows $500 rebates for used vehicles. Essentially, if a vehicle is a vehicle, the goal of this bill in totality is to get electric vehicles on the road. Once we've already given them a larger rebate to buy that vehicle to begin with to get it on the road, why would we give another one after it's already been on the road? And essentially, when we're dealing with that, if the goal is to get new ones on, it should be for new vehicles, not used, because that vehicle's already on the road, right? I ask you for your support.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, I oppose the amendment. This rebate program has both a new component and a used component, and I think both components are important and valuable to the bill.
Members, A5 is before you. The author of the bill recommends a no vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No. No.
The amendment is not adopted. Members, we have A6 before us.
A6. I think that we're going to pull that one, Madam Chair.
We have A7 before us.
Yes, I'd like to move the A7 amendment. You know, this kind of probably is the most homespun amendment of all of them. You know, when we look at, you know, we don't have a state gas station. As legislators, we can go fill up with gasoline in the SOB parking lot or over at the state capitol. This would treat, you know, all members alike, whether they put gasoline in the car or electricity, that we'd simply ask you that you pay for the electricity that you use. So I think this is a pretty common sense amendment, and I think it's friendly, and I appreciate your support.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, I don't know if it's friendly, but I'll take it. I agree with the fact that we should be paying for the electricity we consume here at the Capitol to charge our vehicles. I know there's actually a standalone bill that Representative Fabian is authoring that includes the same language, and I signed on to that bill. I support it. I've actually inquired of the Department of Administration in asking them to start charging us for the electricity. I think that's the right thing to do. So I support the amendment.
Members, A7 is before you. The author of the bill recommends a yes vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. A8 is
no. How petty and cheap.
Members, A8 is before you. Is there somebody who is going to?
No. I will move the A8 amendment. And this amendment to here, it's just really limiting or removing the ability for you know, for-profit and non-profit companies really to be able to take advantage of this. Again, you know, why are we helping out corporations? You know, I think we it'd be great to be able to have electric vehicles for individuals, but you know, sometimes when you have a corporation, they've got a non-profit part of it, and you know, that's why we went after both of them, was that you know, corporation isn't going to really be able to directly benefit from this, but you know, if individuals want to, then an individual should be able to get a rebate under this.
Representative Stevenson.
I oppose this amendment. I think that we, you know, want to encourage our fleet to turn over to electric. I think that corporate fleets and not-for-profit fleets are an important part of that, and I think that they're important consumers for the dealers as well. So I oppose the amendment.
Members, A8 is before you. The author of the bill recommends a no vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay.
No. No.
The amendment is not adopted. Members, A11 is before us.
Madam Chair, we're going to yank that one, and 12.
Number A11 is withdrawn. A13 is before us.
What's that?
A13.
Oh, yeah. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A13 amendment. This kind of goes to the other spectrum of the early amendment that was defeated before the committee. We worked to, you know, you look at this list that Ms. Bacchus put out. We have BMW, Jaguar, Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, Tesla, you know, a lot of great brands, and we appreciate the status symbol that they bring to folks when they're in their neighborhoods. But this would simply just limit high-income people, so folks above average means, folks that we all have friends and neighbors with, to simply, if once you're to the fourth-tier income tax levels, you know, I think the idea that anyone needs to encourage those folks to spend their hard-earned dollars on a particular vehicle with a rebate is probably lost. If our goal is to, you know, drive the cost of vehicles down to the less fortunate in our districts, that maybe the top tier doesn't necessarily need the same amount of support to help their status in their neighborhood. So this would just limit from the fourth tier up that they wouldn't be allowed to get the $2,500. They can afford it themselves, and appreciate your support.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, I support the amendment, though it is unusual to hear a Republican engaging in open class warfare, but I still do support this amendment.
Okay. Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that there seems to be a very narrow band of Minnesotans who Representative Swazinski thinks should be eligible for purchasing electric vehicles if they're not low income and not high income, but it seems like a good one.
Thank you. Members, A13 is before us. The author recommends a yes vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. I do not see any questions from members. Am I missing? I apparently am not.
Madam Chair, I'd like to roll call.
Would you like a roll call? Okay. Representative Swazinski asked for a roll call. Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 4181 be, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. A roll call has been requested. The chair votes aye.
Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Swazinski?
No.
Representative Acom?
Yes.
Representative Baker? Representative Bierman? Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Yes.
Representative Mahoney? Yes. Representative Meckland? Oh. Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Stevenson?
Yes. That's because that's what you want, more energy bills in your community.
Members, there are 10 ayes and 4 nays. With that, it's adopted. Recommended.
The next bill we have on the agenda is House File 1842. Chair Wagenius, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move House File 1842, be returned to the Committee on Ways and Means that, with a recommendation that it be referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Representative Wagenius moves her bill. Representative Wagenius, you have a DE amendment, coded DE1. Would you like to move that amendment?
Yes. This is a delete all, and I would move the DE1 to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
Representative moves the DE1 amendment to get it in the shape she requests. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius, you also have an author's amendment, coded A20.
I do have an author's amendment where we had to do some technical amendments and make sure that all the accounts balanced, and so I would move A20.
Representative Wagenius moves the A20 amendment to get the bill in the shape she would like. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius, please tell us about your bill.
Members, you've seen most of, actually all of this bill before. What is different is some of the numbers. This is a bill we passed last year, spending the money in the renewable development account. Since then, a couple of things have changed. And the big one is that we are fully funding in this bill.
Senator Wagenius, could you maybe pull the mic up? Thank you.
Okay. We're fully funding in this bill the request by Prairie Island Community. And so with that, we had to reduce some of the numbers in some of the other categories. We also have some new language from the Prairie Island Community, but you heard this language last week. So there is not a lot new here, some new numbers, but conceptually it's very much what you saw 2 years ago or last year and past the House floor. So with that, I think we should hear from some community members that signed up to talk about the bill.
We had six people sign up for public testimony. If it's all right with members, we'll go forward with public testimony and then do discussion afterwards. Crystal Johnson is up first. And on deck is Greg Mast. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Crystal Johnson. I'm the city manager for Granite Falls. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have a potential project that we're respectfully asking as you move through this process to take in consideration in adding to this bill. We feel this we have a unique project for an opportunity of one-time funding with RDA funds for a carbon-free, pollution-free, fuel-free, renewable electric generation project that is hydro generation within the community of Granite Falls. This stems from a current retirement in place of Xcel Minnesota's Valley coal fire plant that has, in a result, caused some financial hardships to our community. And I know I only just have a few minutes, so I will. There is a handout with some additional information, and otherwise, I will stand for questions.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the chair for being so quick in hearing a Republican bill today. I really appreciate that. So. No, this is my bill that we're moving forward. You know, I just would speak in positivity towards it. You know, this is a critical infrastructure. It's a unique place that is essentially on the shores of two different House districts, two different Senate districts in southwest Minnesota. You know, it's obviously, this is a part of a larger project. The city of Granite Falls has had a large, their operation with Xcel has a large place that has closed down, and so this is, plays a supplemental role in the rest of energy production within the city. So appreciate the chair listening to this and the other members of the committee. Thank you.
I don't see further questions. Thank you for your testimony. Greg Mast, and then following Greg is Brendan Jordan.
Good Good morning, Chairman Long and members of the committee. My name is Greg Mass, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Energy County, Minnesota. We are a nonpartisan, industry-led nonprofit organization dedicated to growing and strengthening Minnesota's clean energy business ecosystem. And our membership is comprised of over 40 clean energy companies that range from startup businesses to Fortune 100 and 500 corporations who employ thousands of Minnesotans across the state. Simply put, we are the business voice for clean energy. And today I'm here to testify in support of House File 1842. And I'd like to thank Representative Wagenius and members of the committee for bringing this bill forward and for the work that's been put into this proposal. This bill supports strategic investments that will help fuel the important transition to a clean, affordable, and reliable energy system while unleashing additional economic opportunities and jobs across our state. And in particular, I'd like to voice specific support for the Solar Energy Incentive Program. As interest in solar from energy consumers continues to grow, the Solar Energy Incentive Program plays a vital role in expanding the availability of solar to Minnesotans. We appreciate the allocation of funding proposed in the bill and the additional economic activity and jobs that will flow from the continuation of the successful program. In terms of economic impacts, Minnesota is currently home to over 61,000 clean energy jobs, and this number continues to grow. Stable and predictable policies paired with advances in technology are making solar an attractive investment across the state. And today, over 4,000 Minnesotans work in our solar industry, and these jobs have grown over 117% since 2015. And there are four times as many solar jobs in the industry today than just a decade ago, according to recent data from the Solar Foundation. And over the past year, solar installer has been the fastest growing job here in Minnesota, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So in closing, the provisions in this bill for the Solar Energy Incentive Program provides the needed certainty that our solar businesses rely upon to further invest and grow here in Minnesota and will expand the marketplace for clean energy solutions. Building on the success of the program will also provide our state with a competitive advantage while spurring the creation of additional jobs and economic opportunities for Minnesotans. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Mast. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have or could you direct me to where I could find the average wage of these 61,000 workers, particularly the installers, as that's the fastest growing?
Chairman Long, Representative Mahoney, I'd be happy to pass along the reference from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and then there's also a Department of Energy study that we can share with you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Chair Long. This question is just a general one. Does the community solar gardens, do they qualify for the solar rewards program?
You know? Mr. Mast.
Chairman Long, Representative Slubzinski, there is a community, a solar rewards community program, but specifically within this bill, what I have outlined that we are supportive of is for the funding that's allocated to the solar rewards program, specific to rooftop solar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mass. Brendan Jordan. And then on deck is Braden Solon.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute. I represent a coalition called Drive Electric Minnesota. Drive Electric Minnesota includes automotive dealerships, manufacturers, electric utilities, including investor-owned municipal and rural electric cooperatives, EV owners, and a number of environmental nonprofit organizations. Today, electric vehicles are a relatively small part of our transportation system, but it will grow, and there's a lot of exciting things happening in the state today. Includes manufacturing of electric buses, robotics manufacturing facility in the North Metro. It includes a lot of exciting work by communities around the state, electric utilities, and others. What the state lacks today is a policy framework to provide that catalytic early support to help the industry grow and to really attract a lot of the potential outside investment that is going into other states. Drive Electric Minnesota's policy committee is very supportive of the electric vehicle provisions that are part of House File 1842, including electric vehicle rebate program, investments in transit and school bus electrification, the EV dealership grants, and additional investments in public charging. We believe these are the kind of investments that will accelerate the adoption of EVs and really lead to more jobs and investment in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Next is Braden Solem, and following Braden is David Schaefer.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Braden Solem, and I'm a partner at Ideal Energies. We're a commercial solar development company based here in Minneapolis, and we develop projects for both the public and private sector across the state of Minnesota for Minnesota customers. And I'm here today to voice my support for House File 1842, specifically the solar incentive program piece of the bill. The Solar Awards Program, since its inception, has supported the rapid growth of the residential and small commercial sector of the Minnesota solar industry. The participating solar array installations in this program are installed on Minnesota homes, schools, government buildings, nonprofits, and businesses, passing these incentives and savings on to them. To give you a little bit of perspective on that, about half of our company's business is done with schools, cities, and counties. Just speaking of schools specifically, we've done about 100 buildings so far around the state under this program, saving our public sector a lot of money. With the rapid decline of the commercial solar investment tax credit and the expiration of the residential tax credit, it is now more important than ever that programs like Solar Awards are expanded and continued to help maintain the rapid growth of our industry. When the Made in Minnesota program was revealed in 2017, this program's predecessor, our industry was left without a solution for a majority of the marketplace for residential and small commercial solar, and the Solar Awards program was subsequently expanded slightly to help make up for this. We commend the legislature's work to replace a portion of the Made in Minnesota funding that was lost with that repeal. This bill, though, would make our industry whole again. By expanding the funding and the term of the program to 2024, we are replenishing a portion of the Made in Minnesota funding, and the time frame of the program is now in line with the original time frame of the Made in Minnesota program, which the industry formed around in Minnesota. Also, the rollover language included in the bill is very important because it will allow the industry to rely on funding allocated to the program to help mitigate delays and inefficiencies we have experienced when working with the utility to interconnect and apply for our projects that has historically hindered our ability to use the full program funding in a given year. Ultimately, the increase in funding and the expanded timeline for the program will give our industry the opportunity to continue to hire Minnesota workers and deliver projects to Minnesota customers across the public and private sector, saving Minnesotans money across the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Beckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Mahoney's question, do you know what these installers are paid, like an hourly rate?
It really depends. I'd have to get back to you on it. I definitely could get you an answer on that question if you want my contact information.
Sounds Chair, like you can follow up offline. Representative Mecklen.
Do you support the prevailing wage?
We do support the prevailing wage. What we found in the state of Minnesota is that demand for solar installers is so high across the board that we end up paying beyond prevailing wage for our installers. With just the rapid growth of the industry and the fact that the fastest growing job title in the state is solar installers and the required electrician work on solar systems, electricians are in extremely high demand. So we find ourselves paying very high wages to our solar installers.
Right. Representative Mecklen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So do you do rooftop solar, one, and two, the gentlemen or the folks that are installing the rooftop solar, are they specifically trained or do they go through some kind of training curriculum so that they're doing it the right way based on the roof systems that they possibly are penetrating?
Mr. Solem.
So we do No residential rooftop. We do commercial rooftop solar. But our installers are extensively trained. They're card-carrying electricians, apprentices, journeymen, and master electricians. Our state has rules around who can install solar, so you need to have master electricians on site with journeymen electricians and apprentices. So it's a pretty strict regimen, and just because our company's quality control level is really high, we make sure that everybody knows exactly what they're doing.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, to the testifier, could you just outline for members of the committee, you mentioned that the federal solar subsidies are going away. Can you just talk about the glide path of when those are expiring and at what percentages?
Mr. Sol. Yeah. Representative Garofalo, the tax credit last year was at 30% for commercial solar I'm speaking about. This year it's 26%. Next year it's 22%, and then in 10% in perpetuity there. Moving forward, unless that has changed. It is my understanding, I'm not a residential developer, but it is my understanding that the residential tax credit expires at the end of this year.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
That's correct. And I just wanted to, because Made in Minnesota was brought up, I think some members of the committee may not be familiar with that program. While it was well-intentioned when it was created, I think there was a bipartisan recognition that that program was a complete disaster. $150 million, we would have been better off setting the money on fire and keeping our hands warm with it as opposed to how that money was spent. And so there was bipartisan recognition that we should repeal that. As part of that repeal, we actually did take, as the testifier mentioned, we did expand the solar rewards program for the residential industry, a program that at that time was, it was supported by.
Nobody's moving fast enough.
Yeah, said. You shut it off. How appropriate! You didn't like my comments, huh? I've heard opposition to my comments, but I never shut the lights off before. That's. But Madam Chair, we did, or Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, we did put extra money into solar rewards to account for that. So I'm not sure I understand the rationale for why we should be continuing to subsidize that, but an open-ended question that doesn't require an answer now would maybe be if advocates of the Solar Rewards Program could tell us when they think it is appropriate for it to expire, when that program will be able to go away. So that's just an open-ended comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think our next testifier may be able to speak to that. Representative Swazinski.
My question was kind of like this. So
okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Solem. David Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Schaefer, Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. We represent about 110 different solar companies in the state of Minnesota, and somewhere between 25 and 30 would directly benefit from this bill. So I'm here to voice my support for House File 1842. There's three provisions of this bill that we support. The first is the solar rewards provision, as Greg and Braden mentioned. The next is the solar on schools portion, and then the last is the solar in schools or solar in parks allocation for $3.5 million. As far as the solar rewards program goes, it's the biggest fund for residential and small commercial in the state, so many of our members rely on this incentive program to continue to operate in the state. It results in hundreds of jobs that are good-paying jobs and would allow us to install more than several thousands of rooftop jobs each year. On a go-forward basis. The most important reason for why we need to continue the solar rewards program is the step-down of the investment tax credit. But another really important element here, and something that Representative Garofalo was going to, was the repeal of the Made in Minnesota program. So I guess I'll get to his sort of generic question here, which is, I think at the time that the transition occurred between Made in Minnesota and solar rewards, there was a belief that over time, the rate of solar would drop down to a point where no subsidy was needed, and perhaps quicker than is turning out to be reality. What we found in that program is this program originally started at about 8 cents a kilowatt hour and has dropped down to 7 over several years. By the time that drops down to zero, we will be presumably without any need for further subsidy, but at the moment, we're still far away from that mark. And so as solar continues to decline in costs, I do expect that incentive level to go down, but we're not there yet today. I'm optimistic that with the passage of this bill, we can get closer to that and hopefully won't have to come back and ask for more money in the future. But that will be dependent on the price declines of solar modules as well as the workforce. As far as the solar on schools bill is concerned, we support this bill heavily. We've been working on it for several years here. One of the benefits of solar on schools that's you can't get by just having schools enter the solar rewards program is schools have a very large electric load. So allowing them to build systems that are much bigger than 40 kilowatts helps the schools save money on their electric bills, which then can be returned to the taxpayers through reduced property tax incentives or reduced property taxes. This would help open up a new market segment in the state and would lead to more clean energy jobs. And finally, I'll just mention on the solar and parks allocation, we've gone to several parks. They're really great educational opportunities for people that drive in to get experience with solar. They're usually very visible, and we support the further expansion of those. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Is there any other anybody else who wants to testify to the bill? Not seeing anybody. Any discussion to the bill before we get to amendments? I don't see any either. Well, then we will move on to amendments. The first amendment is coded A19. This is my amendment, so I will move it. And the amendment takes two good ideas from Representative Stevenson's bill for the electric vehicle rebate program. It includes leased vehicles in the rebate program, and it includes additional supplemental rebate for low-income participants.
Representative, I recommend that yes vote.
Any discussion to my amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next we have the A4 amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is my amendment. I'd move the A4. This amendment adds a prevailing wage requirement to a number of provisions in the bill that relate to construction. I think we had a little discussion about prevailing wage a minute ago, but I think prevailing wage is a very important policy that the state has in its toolbox, and I think it's appropriate to have it in this bill, and we're going to be beneficial to have it in this bill. So I'd ask for committee members' support.
Chair Wiginius.
I recommend a yes vote, please.
Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for members of the committee who may not be reading along, in the bill it says 177.30 and 171.41 to 177.45. Can nonpartisan staff or the author of the amendment just cover what sections of law those mean?
Mr. Eliff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, this is not an area of law I'm particularly familiar with. I do know 177.30 is a record-keeping requirement with respect to wages. 171.41 to 45 includes prevailing wage statute itself, as well as provisions that relate to overtime for workers, both on a daily and weekly basis. And that pretty much wraps up my knowledge of these areas, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo. I see that the chair of the Jobs Committee is not present, but I'm wondering if the author of the amendment or the author of the bill have spoken with the chairman of the Jobs Committee. With the inclusion of this amendment, it would seem that this bill would need to go to his committee for review. Have you had any conversations with Chairman Mahoney?
Chair Wiginius.
I have not.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stevenson, Representative Mahoney seems to have just left the room for some reason.
Representative Garofalo, I have spoken to him about the issue of prevailing wage. I have not spoken to him about whether this will require another committee stop.
Mr. Chairman and
Representative Garofalo,
to the author of the bill, 177.30, 171.40.
Could you get closer to your mic? You're further away than I am.
I am not loud. I am not loud enough.
We'll fix that.
No, but Madam Chair, the sections in the subdivision 10, subdivision 3, those do seem to be outside the purview of our committee. I'm just wondering, do you have an opinion on whether this bill, should we include this amendment, whether it should go to the Jobs Committee or not?
Chair Wagenius.
We will check with the chair of the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A4 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The amendment prevails. Next, we have the A10 amendment. Is that going to be authored? Offered?
Yeah.
Representative Micklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, A10 amendment basically is shifting a few of the dollars around from the RDA fund to fund the Becker Industrial Park. As we've heard, this request has been before this committee for years now, and then we recently saw in the last, a month ago, not even, we ran out of water when we really needed it the most. And then the further catalyst, as we all are aware, since about a year ago or more, Google has expressed great interest in moving into Minnesota and being a 100% renewable company and with a $600 million private investment. So I would hope you would find this amendment favorable, Madam Chair.
Chair Wagenius.
Well, thank you, members. It doesn't take a small amount from solar awards or from the electric vehicle rebates. It takes a substantial portion to create a business park. That's an inappropriate use of the money, and a business park would be an appropriate use of bonding dollars, and I suggest that you go to the bonding committee. With that, I would recommend a no vote.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, on the amendment coded A10, the chair recommends a no vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. The amendment does not prevail. Is the A11 amendment being offered?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This
is Swazinski.
Yes, I move the A11 amendment. The XL Energy folks have a proposal before the PUC that talks essentially about the shouldering, where they'll be potentially shutting off seasonally their coal-fired plants, and there was some conversations about added costs because of that. That would be directly related to that. That would potentially get passed on to ratepayers. And this would actually, I think, make some common sense that if there is costs associated with that shouldering, which would obviously lower the use of coal within the state over a period of time during the spring and the fall, that any potential cost because of that, kind of a unique idea, would be help be covered through this account. This would set aside, essentially create a reserve account of $10 million to offset any costs associated with that so that those costs wouldn't be passed on to ratepayers. Because of where the dollars are generated from ratepayers and because this actually reduces CO2 potentially or other things, that we think this is a common sense use of this dollar so that we can incentivize this program if it's going to work, but also insulate ratepayers from any costs that might be associated with it. And I'd ask for your support.
Chair Wagenius.
Yes, members, this amendment takes $5 million from the electric vehicle rebates and takes the equal amount from the Met Council electric buses to put in an account. It's unlikely, it's just likely to sit there and do nothing. And with that, I would recommend a no vote.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair recommends a no vote. All those in favor of the A11 say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
No.
The amendment does not prevail. The A12 amendment, is that being offered? Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A12 amendment. This amendment appropriates $5 million from the RDA to fund the research into nuclear power alternatives. And really, this was the original purpose of the RDA, and I like the thought of getting back to this original intent.
Chair Wagenius.
Yes, well, A12 makes the account out of balance, and I would ask members to vote no.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the chair recommends a no vote. All those in favor of A12 say aye.
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 All opposed? No.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. We are on the A20. Is that being offered? Excuse me, the A15.
No, A15 is being withdrawn, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is the A16 being offered?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A16
Representative
amendment.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment imposes a lifetime $10 million cap on the payments associated with each cask stored at the nuclear power plant. This amendment will save XL ratepayers, your constituents, and mine, tens of millions of dollars. So, folks, if you're looking, obviously, the stock market's taken a bit of bump with the issues internationally that we have. This will directly put dollars into the pockets of your constituents. This will drive buying. This will drive the paying of school loans. This will drive many different things by simply, you know, we're recognizing the fact that there are potentially external costs to those casks, but we are setting a reality. We're letting XL ratepayers know that we care about them and their finances, setting a cap on this cask at $10 million over the lifetime of that cask, I think encourages the federal government to find a solution, but also gives the folks that live in each and all of our districts some relief from the overburdensome costs that are unending with this particular program. And I'd ask for your support and a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Chair Wagenius.
Yes, thank you. This breaches a contract made between XL Energy and the state of Minnesota on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota, who now have nuclear wastes on the shores of the Mississippi River. And it appears that that waste is going to be here for a long, long time, and if not permanently. I recommend a no vote. We do not breach contracts.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't know what information is public on this matter or not, but it's timely that this amendment is before us because, and I don't know if it's public or not, but you know, hundreds of jobs were lost in the East Metro this week. And they were lost, one of the reasons why is because of high energy prices. I think if the press release hasn't gone out on it, it will very shortly. But for years, we have pointed out that high energy prices kill jobs. They do not create jobs. And we're seeing the consequences of that now with energy-intensive industries beginning the process of leaving the state of Minnesota, exporting their pollution to other states where there are less, where their energy systems are less clean. Because we are simply refusing to acknowledge the high cost structure that we have. There is no contract, Representative Wagenius. There is no contract on this. The idea that no changes to the renewable development account could ever be made is with fiction. It's without fact. In fact, you yourself made changes to that contract with Representative Hilty when you increased the fees. You increased the cask fees to an annual assessment as opposed to a per cask allotment historically. Likewise, the Monticello casks were never part of any such agreement. There was no contract. So the idea that we can only make changes to the RDA when the DFL supports it, and that's supporting the contract, but that any time we do something and to advocate for the ratepayers, well, that's a breaking of a contract is just without merit. Again, members, we are the only state in the country that penalizes energy producers for creating carbon-free electricity. We're the only state that specifically targets nuclear power with a specific cask tax. This money does not go to Xcel Energy. It doesn't go to the shareholders. This is simply an add-on that every single ratepayer in the state and those energy-intensive industries are paying for. And I would ask members to support this bill, this amendment that Representative Swazinski is offering. It is a modest reduction in what we are seeing to offset the high costs of community solar and other government-imposed mandates on ratepayers. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. The chair recommends a no vote.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Long.
No.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes.
Representative Acom.
No.
Representative Baker. Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Yes.
Representative Christensen. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Meckland? Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
5 ayes and 8 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Members, we're trying to get the A14 amendment printed and around to folks, so if you're wondering why, that should be coming back. The A14 amendment we're getting printed. Oh, is that full? Oh,
yeah, thank pull you.
That makes it easier. We are on the A21 amendment, if that is being offered.
I'm going to withdraw the A21 amendment.
A21 is withdrawn. And we're on the A22. Yeah. Is that being offered?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This was kind of along the same lines of what we offered. It was taken as a friendly amendment in the last bill that we heard, and wanted to see if we could potentially include that in this language as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now, I thought
Chair O'Keefe.
It was actually the same language, not along the same lines. Is it different?
No, I think it is the same language, yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. If it's the same language, I would recommend a yes vote.
The Chair recommends a yes vote. Is there further discussion on the A22? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A22 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are now on the A5 amendment. Is the A5 being moved? Representative Swazinski.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, sorry, Representative Wagenius. This is along the same lines as the early amendment that was not accepted. It just limits to each vehicle and allows $500 rebates for used vehicles. We should limit the rebates for one per vehicle. So once essentially we're making the same point once again that once we have a vehicle. Yeah.
This,
am I on the wrong A5? Oh, sorry. I was looking at my other list of A5 amendment. Sorry to the committee. This amendment would require, so across the state, whenever state dollars are involved in putting in charging stations, that essentially we're going to treat them the same as we do here. We would ask that people pay for the electricity that's being offered so that we're not buying gas or buying electricity for folks across the state, just asking them that they are charged for what they pay, what they're using. So appreciate your support.
Chair Wagenius.
I think it's a good amendment, and I would recommend a yes vote.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Members, I do not see further amendments. Is there further discussion to the bill? Representative Swazinski?
Just ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested on the bill. Any discussion to the bill? Chair Wagenius, any closing remarks?
I would renew my motion that House File 1842, as amended, be returned to the Committee on Ways and Means with a recommendation that it be referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Chair Wagenius renews her motion that House File 1842, as amended, be returned to the Committee on Ways and Means with a recommendation that it be referred to the Government Operations Committee. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Swazinski?
Nope.
Representative Akam?
Yes.
Representative Baker? Representative Bierman?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen? Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Yes.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Meckland?
No.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Stevenson?
Yes.
There being 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Wagenius. Members, that is our business for today, and we are adjourned.